Can't cast away his people. And Paul's saying, yes, he's cast away his people before. He set them aside in the past. He used them as a vessel of honor in the past. Then he used them as a vessel of dishonor. That's what they've been under this Babylonian captivity and really extending all the way to the days of Paul. That's in Romans 2 as well. A vessel of dishonor. And then at the stoning of Stephen, he turned them into a vessel of wrath. They were just numbered among the Gentile nations. There's nothing unusual that Hosea enacted that for them. That's per God has reserved the right to do that based on the response of the clay, based on how the nation responded in faith or in unbelief. Now let's finish off verse 11 here. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. And so we have the past horror things that have been done in Jezreel, and now we go out to the future, the battles that are going to happen in Jezreel that ushers them, and they'll be regathered into that kingdom, that believing remnant, as they're regathered. So Paul's point in using this quote is that going all the way back to Hosea, before even the Assyrian captivity, way back in the fourth course of punishment, Hosea had already been explaining, based on their response of faith or unbelief, he could use Israel as a vessel of honor, a vessel of dishonor, a vessel of wrath, a vessel of mercy. He could do what he wanted based on their response. He could declare what kind of vessel they were, what they fitted themselves for on the basis of faith. So that's what we get in this first one, the reference to Hosea here. The reference to Hosea, God has made Israel a vessel of honor and then one of dishonor and then one of honor again, sometimes for long periods of time. And there's some other references here in Hosea you can look, but it basically says the same thing. He will be their people. He's not their people. He's their people. Then he's not their people. The nation is his people, and then they're not his people. And then they are his people again. It's nothing unusual about what Paul's saying God is doing with the nation of Israel in the days of Paul. He can likewise take of Jews and Gentiles vessels of wrath and form them into vessels of mercy. He has perfect right to do that. He's the potter. He's the creator. He's the potter. He's the one that can decide what kind of vessels he has and what he gives the opportunity for. And now he's dispensing. He was willing to show his wrath on the vessels of wrath. But instead, he's going to hold that back, and he's going to take the vessels of wrath and dispense his mercy on the world. And make vessels of mercy. What a great opportunity. What a great privilege to be a part of this time. Nothing like this will ever happen again. And that's what we need to realize when we're in chapter 9, when we ask, well, it's hard to explain to people God's being his kindness and goodness and long-suffering and forbearance and grace and mercy and peace and all that when the world is in the condition it's in. But you see, the whole world deserves his wrath and his judgment. Not just the Hitlers and the Stalins. If all he did was come back and deal with Hitlers and Stalins, you know what would be back in place next week? Some more Hitlers and Stalins. He has to come back and deal with all his enemies. All those who have rejected him and what his son did on that cross for them. All those who have rejected the gospel of grace. All those who have rejected the cross work of Christ in unbelief. He's going to deal with all that. And now he's holding that back to give them more time to respond in faith. So Paul's point for today is that in the riches of his long-suffering goodness, and we read that earlier in Romans 2:4, he's holding back his wrath on the vessels of wrath, apostate Israel and the Gentile nations, and is instead dispensing the riches of his grace on his vessels of mercy, individual Jews and Gentiles, he's calling them out. Just like in Matthew, where we see him calling out the believing remnant out of that apostate nation, God is now calling out Jews and Gentiles alike out of apostate Israel and out of the apostate Gentile nations, and he's calling them out. And instead of destroying them, he calls them out and gives them mercy and shapes them and gives them good news. The good news of the death and resurrection of his son for sinners, for his enemies, and offers them salvation from the coming wrath. That's what today is. That's what Peter, when he goes to explain Paul, he says it's the day of salvation. It's the long suffering of God. God giving his enemies, after they hung his son on a cross, the opportunity to escape the coming judgment, to escape the coming wrath, to be a part of God's plan and purpose, to be a part of his vessel of honor, to display his glory in the heavenlies. And the Jews needed to realize that while, yes, it's bad news that God has temporarily set aside his prophetic program, the nation of Israel, and his prophetic program with her, that it's not a hopeless situation. There's good news too. And the good news is God's inviting them to, God should have come and destroyed them, God instead came and invited them to participate in another purpose and plan and program. His mystery program for the body of Christ to establish his glory, to display his glory in the heavenlies. That's what he's doing today. Today, he is displaying the riches of his long-suffering kindness to his enemies, and he can do that as long as he likes. Let's go back and let's look at the Isaiah passage. Let's go back and look at Isaiah. Let's go to Isaiah 10. That's back a little further here. Isaiah 10. Isaiah 10. Let's go ahead and catch up in our notes here. Isaiah 10, and let's look at verse 22 and 23. Isaiah 10, 22 and 23. All right, let's pick it up at verse 20, just to kind of get a little bit of the background. Maybe it'd be a good idea, since we want to learn the whole Bible, so we understand that. When we look at our timeline for today, Hosea is back here in the fourth course of punishment as well. He's going to be prophesying about things coming up. So when you go into Isaiah and you start reading Isaiah, you know what you're going to start reading about? He's way back before all this, like Hosea. So guess what he's going to talk about? He's going to talk about the northern kingdom and the Assyrian captivity. Then what's he going to talk about? He's not going to be talking about things going on in the world today, the countries of the world today, what's going on in the United States, God sending floods to people or destroying cities. He's talking about what's going on back here. In Isaiah, he's going to talk about what the northern kingdom going to Assyrian captivity. Then he's going to talk about the southern kingdom going into Babylonian captivity. He's going to talk about the earthly ministry of Christ. He's going to talk about out here in the tribulation period and the kingdom. Those are the things he's talking about. And he's right here at the beginning. He's warning them, especially the northern kingdom at this time, and Judah, the Assyrian captivity in Judah for the Babylonian captivity. So let's go and look at verse, with that in mind, go to chapter 10 and verse 20. And now he's looking way out here at this, what we call that tribulation period. Verse 20, "And it shall come to pass in that day that the remnant of Israel and such are escaped the house of Jacob shall no more again stay upon him that smote them, but shall stay upon the Lord, the Holy One of Israel in truth." That's what we've been talking about in our Matthew study, that believing remnant God called out here, Christ called out here, and Peter's still working with here. before the dispensation of grace. There's going to be another believing remnant out here in that 7-year period. He's going to create there, and they're going to be the ones dependent on God. We're going to rely on God in faith, and that he's going to deliver them. Now let's pick it up at verse 21. This is Isaiah 10, verse 21. The remnant shall return, even the remnant of Jacob, unto the mighty God. For though thy people Israel be as the sand of the sea, yet a remnant of them shall return. The consumption decreed shall overflow with righteousness. They're going to get into this tribulation period, and going to suffer that severe tribulation period, that severe time of tribulation, and they're going to be just a small remnant. We're reading about that in Matthew, a very small remnant. God's going to grow them into a great nation and grow them into a great kingdom, and they're going to be established out in that kingdom. Their seed, even though they're small, remember how Romans 9 opens up? It's just a remnant that's still God considers his people, the believing remnant. But it's going to grow into, he's going to use that believing remnant to turn into and create that nation from. Go over to chapter 11 of Isaiah. Chapter 11. And look at verse verse 10. And in that day, so he says in that day, so we know we're talking about here out of the end, that tribulation period. In that day, there shall be a root of Jesse, which shall send for an ensign of the people. To it shall the Gentile seek, and his rest shall be glorious. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria and Egypt and Pathros and Cush and Elam and Shinar and Hamath and from the islands of the sea. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the world. He's going to finish his program with Israel. It's going to start as this believing remnant that Paul references. He's going to talk about it in Romans 9, and he's going to talk about it again in Romans 11. It's a small remnant, but their number is going to be as the sand of the sea, as the stars in the sky, as the dust of the earth out in this kingdom. He's going to restore the nation. He's going to regather them and restore them in the land and make them the head of the nations rather than what they are in their history for the most part. And that is to be the tail of the nations. So Isaiah, let's go back to our points here. So Isaiah said that even in their accursed state, he would always preserve a remnant through which he would bring Israel back to himself. That's these two passages. Let's go back to, before we go to Romans 9 again, on the way to Romans 9, go to Matthew. Go to Matthew 24. Follow this remnant theology as we go through here. Matthew 24, verse 15. Here we have the Olivet Discourse. We haven't gotten this far in our Matthew study yet. We're back at chapter 21. But here, let's read ahead a little bit. Look at verse 15. So remember, we're talking about this remnant. God is going to restore the nation of Israel. The casting away isn't permanent. It's only temporary. And this has been something he's done in the past, at other times in the past, as Hosea enacted. Israel has been his people, and then they're not his people, and then they are his people. They've been vessels of honors, and sometimes they've been vessels of dishonor, and sometimes it's occurred over long periods of time. So that's not unusual. They are going to be reduced to a believing remnant. But that's okay. God's going to turn them into a vast number that's going to become that nation of Israel. He's going to take that remnant, and they're going to be as the sand of the sea, the dust of the earth, the stars in the sky. And let's read some more here about this believing remnant. When we're out here, we won't go back to the timeline, out in that tribulation period. Verse 15, Matthew 24, verse 15. When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation, and we'll go into obviously more detail this when we get to it in our Matthew study, but here when he talks about this abomination of desolation, it's as spoken of by Daniel, the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoever readeth, let him understand. He's talking about especially now that kicks in those last 3.5 years of intense judgment, intense persecution of the believing remnant as it begins that judgment period for the world, for the earth. Verse 16, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. It's going to be so bad they need to flee into the mountains. Let him which is in the housetop not, don't even come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. And woe to them that are with child and to them that are give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall the great tribulation, such as not, was not seen since the beginning of the world, to this time, nor shall be, nor ever shall be. That is going to be the worst time of persecution and suffering and judgment that the world has ever seen. And except those days, verse 22, except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh saved. But for the elect's sake, there we have our believing remnant. The bulk of the nations are going to be in rebellion against God. They're going to be under his wrath. But for his elect, for that believing remnant, for he's going to preserve them and he's going to shorten the days. This whole tribulation period is just 7 years. And once at this point in the Olivet Discourse, he's especially those last 3.5 years. And it's going to be the time, he's going to hold it to a time schedule. It's going to be a short period of time. And he's going to preserve that believing remnant. And when they come out of that tribulation period, when he ushers them out of that tribulation period, delivers them out of that that tribulation period and ushers them into that kingdom, he's going to restore them as a nation. As he, in the exact accord with what he promised to Abraham, his nation would be so numerous as the sand of the sea. And those days were cut short that might be the case. So here's the point that I think is really important to see. Here we have two aspects. Let's go back to Romans 9. Romans 9. And let's look at verse 28 again. Romans 9, verse 28. Isaiah, remember what question he's asking. The critic wants to know, why has it been so long? Right? Keep that question in mind. And we've already had an answer to that. The reason it's been so long is because God has been long-suffering. That's back in verse 22. And the thing that he wants these Jews to understand, don't begrudge this time of long suffering. Don't begrudge this time when God's dispensing his grace and mercy. Don't begrudge God as in being long suffering and forbearing, gracious and compassionate and goodness and kindness. He's been doing that long. And the critics thought 25 years from long. Well, it's been 2,000 years now. God's being long and maybe... I was tempted to do this, but I decided not to. I was going to put so many O's in here, it filled up the whole slide. That's what God's doing today. He's being long-suffering so that as many as possible can be saved, can respond in faith to his gospel and the work of his son on that cross to escape the coming wrath. But now, so you have the long aspect, but now look at, you also have a short aspect. And that's where we're going to look here in verse 28. Romans 9, verse 28. For he will finish the work and cut it short. in righteousness, because a short work will the Lord make upon the earth. A short work. Matthew had talked about unless the days were cut short, unless the days were shortened. So let's just put this in perspective. And today, why has it been so long? Because God is being long-suffering. And when this ends, when he's done being long-suffering, it's going to be short time of wrath and judgment. He's going to cut it short, Isaiah said. He's going to finish it off. We shouldn't begrudge the fact God is being long-suffering now just because we want all our problems removed and we want everything to go well for us. And because when this time of God's long-suffering ends, over the 2,000 years now, a long suffering, when that ends, it's going to be a short work. It's going to be of judgment. It's going to be on our timeline here. The body of Christ is removed, and then it's just this little 7-year period. It's going to be a short work, and he's going to end it. He's been spending 2,000 years being long-suffering, offering salvation to all, offering mercy to all, mercy to his enemies. Long-suffering, on and on and on and on and on and on and on. And when that ends, he's going to restart his program, his prophetic program with the nation of Israel, and he's going to cut it short in wrath and judgment. That's what's next on the timeline. All right, so we'll go ahead and finish up at that point here. We could just look... We'll look at a little bit on the Lord Sabaoth. That's the Lord of hosts. We'll just finish up with that maybe next time and take a look at a couple things about that. You should know pretty much about it now because it's kind of flows out of what Stephen saw that we discussed last time at the end of Acts 7. And we'll just pick it up there next week, finish that off. And then he kind of goes a little bit different direction, and he's going to start talking in those last couple verses of Romans 9 and on into the first verses of chapter 10. He's going to start talking about righteousness. And he's going to show where Israel went wrong in the past, where they're going wrong now, but where they're going to end up. And he's going to go over that. And that's what we'll enter into Romans 10 from that point.